Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Hank Feger. He is an executive coach who has been training business leaders around the world to change their behaviours in the realms of communication, personal leadership and team building for more than 30 years. And he is the author of a new book, Behaviour Change, A View from the Inside Out. So are you there, Hank?
I am, Mike. Nice to be here.
Well, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I'm very intrigued by your subject, and I can't help wondering, where did all this start for you? How did you come to get onto this particular subject?
Well, I think it really began, Mike, back in 1976 when I started to work with a gentleman named Timothy Galway, who wrote a book called The Inner Game of Tennis. And he had realized that a behavior like tennis or golf or skiing could be taught in a way that enables the body's wisdom and the individual style to emerge. And so he trained me as a coach. And then we began to work first with individuals in areas like tennis and skiing and golf, but then we started to work in the corporate world in 1982 at AT&T and helping to executives to start to change. So that's where it all started.
Right. You've been at it for quite a long time. Have you always specialized, say, in the realms of business or do you work on a sort of literally one-to-one basis?
Well, yes. When I started working primarily in the corporate sector, which now goes back a good 25 years or so, I started working with groups of managers. Many times the human resources people would ask me to come in after an employee survey was done, and they would say, you know, can you help make our managers better listeners? Or could you help our managers be better at communicating? And so I would run essentially seminars or workshops for groups of up to 20. But over the years, as I started to realize that if we only change a behavior, essentially behavior modification, but we don't look at what contributes to behavior, then when you put an individual under stress or duress, there's a great likelihood that we're going to revert back to that old behavior. So from that, I started to work with individuals, more high-level executives, in terms of presentation skills, communication skills, working with their teams, and I started to specialize more in the one-on-one work.
Right.
Just going to say, with the one-on-one work, I'm able to, you know, help individuals, because it's more private, to start to examine and look inside as to why do they behave the way they do and what is contributing to holding it in place, so that if they want to change a behavior or learn a new way of communicating, then they have the opportunity to examine it and then make a different choice.
Right, yes. I was wondering whether people actually recognize that they have a behavioral problem.
Well, what you're touching on, Mike, really is the first step in change, and that is awareness. And sometimes that awareness comes from oneself, but many times it has to come from outside of us. In the business world, many, many companies now use what's called a 360-degree feedback, and it's a way for a manager or an executive or even an employee to get feedback from their peers, from their bosses, and from people that work for them, so that that's how they become aware that they possibly need to change a behavior.
Right. Would that apply equally in the case of, say, personal relationships as opposed to a working situation?
There's no question about it. Sometimes that feedback comes back in a relationship of a husband and wife or partners, and one gives the other feedback or makes what's called a behavior request, where they ask you to change a behavior. And so it's, as many people would say, it's sometimes a little more difficult to accept that feedback, especially if there's an emotional component of the relationship. But the same tenets still apply, is that first we need to become aware of it and take ownership of whatever it is that they're asking us to change. And then look at the next stages of change, which is, once you accept it, is to understand what's contributing to it. You know, when we have habits, what creates a habit? Where does it come from? We put it there in place. And once we're aware of it and then understand what's keeping it in place, we can make a different choice and we can improve it. We can try a new way to do it. And then once that choice is made, we need to reinforce it. In other words, practice with feedback brings improvement. So interestingly, we need feedback initially to even help us understand what needs to be changed. And then we also need feedback to reinforce the new behavior.
Yes. I've noticed myself that if you sometimes pick up people on bad behavior, you get the response, well, I can't help it, that's just how I am. Mm-hmm. How would you respond to that?
Well, I think what you're addressing is the aspect of the willingness to change. And, you know, there's an old joke that went around years ago, how many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? And the answer is only one, but the light bulb has to be willing to be changed.
So, right.
You know, I too have heard that expression, and some people say, well, this is just the way I am, or I'm hardwired this way. Mm. And my response to that is that if there is benefit in that individual to make the change in their behavior, if they can see that there's value in it, rather than doing it simply because their partner or someone else said you need to change a behavior, then there might be a willingness to do it. But we can't force someone to change. It has to be a conscious choice.
Mm. Now, from what you've said so far, I believe that you're mainly concerned with communication. Now, that obviously between people that are very close is a very important aspect. And it's my own experience that there can be misunderstanding because perhaps the matter that you're speaking about isn't made clear. How would you get someone to change their way of communicating, and how would you pick up on the areas, say, that they're fouling in?
Well, one of the things in terms of communication and what you're addressing is that we can only manage our half of any relationship. And so if someone is not understanding what we're saying, we can blame them and say, you know, they're confused. Or what we can do is what you're referring to, is to realize maybe the way I'm communicating is not clear.
Mm.
And so are there skills or tools to learn how to communicate more clearly? No question about it. There is a way of speaking and then checking for understanding. So I may give you some information right now, and then I might say, so how does that sound, Mike?
Mm.
Or how does that feel? And that would then elicit a response from you, and you would give me some sense of what you understood. And that would help me realize that I might have hit the target, or maybe I need to say it a different way.
Yes.
So when I look at communication, Mike, I break it down very simply in that there's two primary skills. when we're communicating, we're either listening or we're speaking. And so when I work with individuals, whether they be in the corporate world or in the or individuals outside the corporate world, I would look at the skill of what's called active listening. So when you're in the role of a listener, how do you demonstrate your understanding? And it's a paraphrasing technique. That's why they call it active listening. It's at some point you have to say back what it is that you've understood.
Yes.
So that's one skill. When you're in the speaker role, and it's your turn to communicate, the other person may not be a skilled listener. And so, as I just mentioned before, the tool is to speak in, you know, manageable size pieces, so don't talk too long, and then check for the other person's understanding. Ask them, how's that going to work for you? How do you feel about it? You know, what does that mean to you? And so that elicits a response from them.
Yeah, yeah. Do you find that people find it difficult to change their behavior?
I think that if it's offered to them and there are tools or skills, that many of our behaviors can be modified or can be changed. I think where people have difficulty, and I know of my own experience, and maybe you've experienced this as well, is that I try to change a behavior, whether it be taking on a new exercise routine, or for some people it's a diet, or for some people it's quitting, you know, a habit, and they struggle with it. And it is difficult because they've not changed their thinking. They haven't changed something inside. They haven't looked at, do they really value it? And then I think it is difficult to change, and I think that the change won't last. But in working with, as you mentioned at the top of your show, and working with executives, working with managers, and these are people that are very successful. They've gotten to roles in their life where obviously they've done some things right, and now they're even trying to change behavior at that level. And I see time and time again that it can be done. That with a conscious choice and with patience and with feedback, that behavior can be changed.
Yeah. Now, you speak of an internal operating system.
Yes.
Explain what that is.
Yes. What I came to realize after working with individuals for so long and trying to help them with behavior change is that, like a computer, there is a system inside of us. And that system is comprised of our core beliefs. And when I say core beliefs, I mean those things that you believe to be true about yourself and the world that you live in. It's kind of your story. And those core beliefs then contribute to your values. And our values are the principles that essentially guide our lives. You know, it's what we deem important to us. It's what gets us up in the morning. It's what, you know, keeps us focused on accomplishing things. And those values then contribute to our attitude. Are we a glass half empty person? Are we a glass half full person? You know, optimist, pessimist, realist. And those contribute, because they're at such a deep level, they then contribute to how we think and feel. So I talk about that there's this component called self-talk. It's a little voice inside of our head. Sometimes it's our best friend, sometimes it's our worst enemy. Based on what we're saying to ourselves and how we feel, we then realize we have choices. We make a choice, it becomes our behavior. So behavior is like output. And what I've described is this internal operating system. Now, that system exists within all of us. Whether we come from the U.S., whether we are European, whether we're from Asia, the culture affects us in many ways, but we all have that system. Now, on that system, there's a program running. And that program is essentially what is contributing to why our lives are the way they are. And we're the programmer. So if the behavior, if the program is not serving us, we have the opportunity to go in and make some changes in that program. So that's why I like to use the term internal operating system.
You talk about people having core beliefs. When you're in a one-to-one situation, do you find that they are often influenced, say, by their religious beliefs or something of that nature, and they may perhaps be operating from a position of fearing the consequences if they don't behave a certain way?
Exactly, Mike. What you're referring to is that there's a number of factors that contribute to those deep-seated beliefs. And in some cases, it is their religious upbringing or their religious beliefs. Sometimes it is fear-driven. Sometimes it's, situations of confidence. There's a simple exercise that I work with and that I offer in the book to people. And sometimes when I'm working with an individual or even with a group, I will ask them to tell me or tell the rest of us, if we're working in a group, about the important people, places, and events from their life that have contributed to who they are today. And I put a time limit on it. So I say, you have 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, when you scan through your life and you'd have to come up with, well, I only have 5 minutes to tell you about those important people, places, and events. What would I tell you? And many people immediately start with their parents or their grandparents.
Yes.
Some, primary caretakers that contributed to them. And then some very powerful experiences or events. Now, I share something in my story, which a lot of people relate to. When I was 8 years old, and I took my first mathematics test in school in grade 3, I got a 98 out of 100. So I missed one question, and I was so excited because I'd gotten the best score in the class. I ran home from school. I ran into my home, and I, yelling, "Mom, Mom, guess what?" She comes running out with my baby sister in her arms, and she said, "What's the problem?" And I said, "No problem. I got a 98 on my math test. Isn't that great?" And she looked at me and very simply replied, "How come you didn't get 100?
Yes.
Now,
you were deflated.
I was deflated, exactly.
Yes.
And she only meant the best for us, for me, for my brother and sister. But how I interpreted it as a very young boy was, not quite good enough. And I started to form that into a belief inside of myself, which was that I'm not quite good enough. Which means, and how that affected my behavior was that I had to try harder. And so I was trying everything, and I went out for every activity, and, constantly in that proving mode. And it's interesting, Mike, because many, many executives and many successful individuals that I've had the privilege to work with, when I share my story, they share their story.
Yes,
and it's
indeed
not that dissimilar.
You've reminded me of my story in a manner of speaking, because during my early years, my mother was very protective. And if I spoke of doing something that she was worried about, she would say to me, "You can't do that, can you?" And it used to make me feel that perhaps I couldn't, whereas I would have loved her to encourage me to do it and give me the confidence. So I think that's my little story that, in a way, relates to the type of thing you're talking about.
Yes, that's exactly it. Thank you for sharing that. It's, I think we all have that voice which sometimes sabotages us. Mm-hmm. But what we can also learn is to develop that voice of where we can be supportive of ourselves. And those voices, mine of, you know, not quite good enough, or yours of, you probably can't do that, they're old voices.
Yes.
But yet they're still there. And so as successful individuals, as high-functioning adults, what I always ask my clients is to say, okay, what else is true for you right now?
Mm.
And so they say, well, what do you mean? Do you mean that I know my subject very well? I said, uh-huh. And then they would say, you mean I have a lot of experience now in this field? Exactly. What else is true for you? And they would say, well, I've been quite successful. Exactly. And what's interesting is those negative voices sometimes are so loud, and they're so powerful, and they're so familiar, that we forget all the positive things and all the things we have accomplished. And so the idea is to remind oneself, as one is working from the inside out, of what is true for you. I mean, bottom line is, I'm breathing. I'm
yeah,
alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the creative force is still coming into me.
Yeah, yeah. I think in a funny way, my childhood experience perhaps put me on a different path where I felt that if anybody had confidence in me and said, we would like you to do this, or we believe you can do that, if they believed in me, I believe that I could do it. And that has helped me through my adult life.
Right. So in other words, you were able to find others to replace that voice by
yes.
giving you that confidence. And you would say, you know, if they have the confidence in me, then I have the confidence in myself. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I think what you're talking about is it's also watching how our lives have led us to like-minded individuals and how we're drawn to some people because they actually support our deeper desires and they support that positive, healthy part of us as compared to supporting that part of us that, you know, doesn't trust, is fear-based, insecure, because we all have it, you know, as human beings.
Mm. Yeah.
But I think that what personal growth is really about and what evolution is really about is recognizing, you know, what we do have, what we are capable of, rather than focusing on what we don't have or what we're not capable of.
Indeed, yes. Now, you help people to release their old habits and patterns,
mm-hmm.
and I believe you have what you call four key principles that create lasting change. Perhaps you would like to talk about them.
Yes, with pleasure. I kind of mentioned them very briefly a little bit earlier, but I'd love to reinforce that.
Yes,
so
right.
whether we're, you know, learning presentation skills to overcome the fear of public speaking, or we're making even a minute change in our life, or for those of us that may be athletes, we want to change our golf grip, or we want to change our parenting skills, or we want to change something at work because a colleague or a manager of ours has given us feedback. These four principles apply no matter what we want to change. And the first step is awareness and acceptance of what that behavior is. In other words, what are we doing right now? How am I doing it? And that requires some non-judgmental awareness. It requires a way to look at it and feel it, to experience it, to see it for what it is. When I'm working with individuals, a very helpful tool sometimes is a video camera. And so that they can actually see the way they communicate or hear the way they communicate.
Yes.
And with that feedback, they then can step outside of themselves for a moment and experience what others are seeing or hearing. So that awareness and acceptance is the first step. Then the second step is to understand what's keeping it in place. What's the payoff? Essentially, it's our behavior. And even if it came from a parent that said something to you like, you know, are you sure you can do that? I'm not sure you can. Or my parent, which is, you know, not quite good enough. Mm. Even if it came from the outside, here we are as adults, and now we're looking at that behavior or that pattern or habit, it's become ours. And so we're keeping it in place. And so we're the ones that are going to have to change it. Mm. So whether it be a core belief or understanding that little voice inside of our head, that's that level of understanding. You know, why do I keep choosing the same kind of person in relationships? Or why is it that I can't stay consistent with an exercise program? Or, you know, I've tried to meditate, but I just can't seem to be consistent with it. Mm. So once we understand, once we are aware that that is in fact what's going on, and we understand what's keeping it in place, we can make a different choice. And this is the empowered part of change, is that we have choice. And we can simply try it differently. And rather than struggling with an old habit or struggling with what we may consider a bad habit, is to choose a new one and introduce it to us. And if the new way of doing it serves us better, creates a greater result, gives us the response that we really like, the old habit will fall away. It's like a baby when you watch a young child and they go from crawling to walking. It takes about a week from when they first stand up and they take those first few steps. And by the end of the week, they're walking across the room instead of crawling. What's interesting, Mike, is notice that they don't go back to crawling.
Mm, right.
Because walking is a much more efficient way to get across the room than crawling on the floor. So that yeah. same process that that child has still exists within us as adults. So if we choose a new behavior, and it really does serve us better, the old habit will begin to leave. And that brings us to the fourth principle, which is reinforcement. Practice with feedback brings improvement. Practice doesn't make perfect. You know, perfection is a spiritual discussion. But practice really does enable us to start to get comfortable with the new way of doing it. So essentially the four principles are awareness, understanding, improvement, and reinforcement.
Mm, right. I think that's put over pretty clear. You've obviously gone through that many times, so it's quite certain that people understand that. Now, in the course of that, you did mention about people passing judgment. And I feel personally that a lot of people are very judgmental, and maybe they don't realize that it can be quite hurtful to another person. I mean, do you get much of that? Do people come to you and actually realize that they have that sort of problem?
Well, again, that, you know, the degree of awareness that they bring into the session will contribute to the quality of their experience and ultimately to the result that we're working on. Yes, we have a judgmental component of our mind. You know, we all have that ability to judge. And I realize that, you know, many of us that are seen to be judgmental and that sometimes have hurt others with our judgment are probably even more judgmental with ourselves than we are with others. Mm. And so I tried to point that out, that not only, you know, again, if we want to even change that component, let's say someone gets the feedback that they are judgmental and they're hurtful.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and if I ask them, well, are you willing to work on that? Are you willing to look at where you've maybe hurt others and what causes you to be so judgmental? And if they say yes, I would apply those four principles. I would then say, okay, so where does that judgment come from? You know, why are you so critical? How much time do you spend in your life accusing as compared to how much time that you spend looking at solutions? I found that to be a very powerful coaching question when it was first, you know, brought to me. That some of us spend so much time, you know, blaming others and coming up with excuses and, you know, judging as compared to shifting that energy to how could we create something even more effective.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes we live in situations or there may be some chaos around us or there may be some difficulties, some challenges. So rather than going into finger-pointing or blaming or judging, is to say, okay, the situation is as it is. And if I can only manage my half of the relationship, how do I need to shift? How do I need to adapt or adjust? So therefore,
right.
I can become part of the solution rather than staying part of the problem.
Now, I believe you are prepared to share some practical tips on how to identify behaviors which sometimes are so deeply ingrained they are difficult to see. So how do you help people to identify in that way?
Well, again, because most of my work has been skill-based, I, from using feedback tools, like instruments like 360-degree feedbacks, or having individuals that are in your life give you specific feedback, or starting with, you know, tell me about what your strengths are in a particular area and tell me what you think are your areas of development or weaknesses, using videotaping, learning to ask others for feedback, and learning how to receive feedback is a very powerful tool and a skill. So that, you know, it's quite fascinating, especially when I'm working with people in presentation skills, is that it's ironic that we have these five senses. And our five senses are outwardly directed. And I can't see myself right now as I'm speaking with you.
No.
You know, I can hear what I'm saying. And so, but yet you may be able to see me and you could give me that feedback that I appear very serious or I appear, you know, very joyful. And yet I have no sense of that. So it's only when I get feedback from the outside. And so sometimes I ask people, who's the expert on how you are inside of yourself? So if I would ask you that, Mike, and I would say, Mike, so who's the expert on how you are inside of yourself?
Right.
And that would be you, right? But then if I said to you, who's the expert, Mike, on how you come across to the rest of the world?
Gosh, that certainly wouldn't be me.
Right. It's the rest of the world.
Yes, yes.
Because, ironically, you know, we go through life knowing what we're thinking, knowing what we're feeling, hopefully, but we don't necessarily know how we're coming across unless somebody else gives us that feedback. So I think what you're really asking is, you know, so how do people become more aware? What are the tools? What are the tips? And so, you know, the idea of not only keeping your eyes open and your ears open and start to learn to be more observational, but ask others, you know, and ask humbly for feedback. Like, you know, how am I contributing to this situation? Or, you know, how do you feel that went? Or, you know, giving people the permission to say, you know, in case I step on your toes or if I ever insult you, could you please just give me that feedback?
Mm.
So what it does is it opens up a dialogue for people.
Right.
So many
yeah.
of us go through life and we're, you know, we make an assumption that we're clear, that we are effective, and yet it's only when others really are willing to share some things with us that we can get a sense, oh, I see that I have areas of improvement.
Right.
You know, and it's fascinating, as I mentioned earlier, to work with very successfully, I mean, I'm a very fortunate consultant. I get to work with very, very high-level executives in the corporate world
yeah.
that are very successful, and yet they still want to work with someone like me because they feel that they could improve. And so that tells me then that we, you know, that there's an opportunity for us to grow as human beings.
Right, yeah. I've noticed, Hank, that if you ever see a relatively young group of children together, there is invariably one or two that you would spot and say they got leadership qualities. They are totally uninhibited and they seem to sort of run the place. Now, do you think that's a quality or something that people are born with?
Yeah, I love this question, Mike, because people ask this question all the time. Are leaders born or are they made?
Yeah.
I think it's a combination of both, to be honest. My experience is that there is a quality that some people just have. As you say, you can see it with groups of children, that they don't look to others. It's as if they're being guided from something inside of themselves to go ahead and do things, and then the other kids follow. And as we start then working with, as they get a little bit older and become adolescents and then into adulthood, you can start to see that leadership skills can be learned. We can learn how to communicate more effectively. We can learn how to get in touch with what our personal vision is. And yet at the same time, not everyone is going to want to be a leader. And in fact, very few people are going to want to be a leader because there's a lot of responsibility that goes with that.
Yeah.
So most people choose to be followers. But where I turn it back into personal leadership is that at the same time, I may be a follower. I may not have, you know, may not be a leader in my organization or in my business. But ultimately, I have to lead my own life. And I think that that's where leadership skills can also be looked at from a very personal aspect, is that, you know, where do I make those choices from? Who is really guiding my life? And that's where I can be a leader in my own life.
Yeah.
I've had a chance to do some leadership seminars and workshops at the United Nations. In first in Geneva and then a few times in New York at the United Nations headquarters. And it was very interesting because I've worked with very high-level individuals that are probably three or four levels, let's say, down below the Secretary General. And they're essentially managers. You know, they run very big parts of the organization.
Mm.
And 20, 25 years ago, when many of them joined the United Nations, they had a dream. They had a vision, which was to bring peace to the world. And they found themselves as peacekeepers, and they found themselves out in the field in, you know, Africa and in certain parts of Europe. And they were very alive. And when they've come into these workshops now, I noticed that there is a quality where they've kind of become bureaucrats, and they are somewhat resentful of the fact that they don't feel that they can make any real difference or change. And so some of the skills and the exercises that we do in the workshop, looking at their personal values, reconnecting with that dream that you may have had as a very young man, and reigniting that spark and helping them to see that they can make a difference, that, you know, they have lots of people that work with them and for them. and that there is a leader inside of them. And if they choose to look inside and reconnect with that vision, then my request of them is to then step up and take more responsibility and speak about their vision, rather than sitting there and saying, well, we can't make a difference. You know, the member nations just hold us captive. You know, the Russians want their pencils on the left side, you know, and the Chinese want their pencils on the right side. And, and I'm saying, yeah, you could look at your job as that, but you could look at your job as something else as well. So part of what my work is to re-empower someone and point them back to themselves to remind them about why they chose to do what they chose to do in the first place.
Yes, indeed. Now, it seems to me, Hank, that sometimes body language perhaps is a more accurate indication of how someone is feeling or whether they're being truthful than the actual words they use. And I believe you are a coach where body language is concerned. So tell us a bit about your own experiences of that.
It's, you know, there's an expression, Mike, that actions speak louder than words.
Yes.
There's another way that it's said sometimes is that, you know, practice what you preach. Or in the 90s, people used to say, walk your talk.
Yes.
And I've noticed, and that to your point, that I've had the chance to now coach individuals in over 20 countries. From China to many different countries within Europe, the UK, the US, Latin America, Australia. And I noticed that, you know, we all have so many cultural differences. And the differences are fascinating. But I'm also fascinated by, you know, what is similar. You know, what connects us as human beings. And what I found is that no matter what culture we come from, everyone seems to agree that actions do speak louder than words.
Yeah.
That body language really lets others see what you're thinking, what you're feeling. And, you know, I point out to people that over almost 60% of what's being communicated or how people are receiving our communication is visual, is literally how do we stand, how do we use our gestures, our posture. Almost 35% is vocal, is the tone of the voice. Is it warm? Is it inviting? Or is it monotone? You know, the modulation, the speed, how people pause, how some people don't pause. And less than 10%, Mike, are the actual words that we choose.
Yeah.
And so even though we choose our words carefully, whether it be in an interview situation like you and I are having, or in a communication, if we're not behaving in a way that is congruent with what we're saying, people sometimes don't hear the words. You know, back to your point, you know, they see your insecurity, or they see your nervousness, or they see your tension. Instead of hearing what it is you're saying, they're almost listening with their eyes.
Yeah.
So body language is very powerful, and people ask me about, you know, leadership, and I give them an example. I said, have you ever seen a photograph of the G8 or the G20 recently when they get together and all the leaders of the world, of the powerful nations? And notice that when they're standing, how they stand with their weight evenly distributed on both feet, and their hands are relaxed at their side. So they come across very open, very upright, very available.
Yes, I can sort of picture the G20 photographs in my mind, and as far as I can recall, you're quite correct about that particular observation.
Yes.
I suppose there could be a degree of people subconsciously copying what other people do. I guess that's also part of some people's behavioral problems, is it not? That they copy other people.
Yeah, and then I guess it really depends on who they're copying in terms of the result. Again, that would be an example of an individual that's not working from the inside. They're literally working from the outside in. They don't trust themselves. They don't trust how they may go about doing something. And so instead what they do is they copy or mimic another individual. Now, I'm not against doing behavior modification, meaning, you know, learn a specific behavior by seeing how does someone do it. There's some wonderful sports tapes, golf videos, where Bobby Jones, you know, some of the greats, you know, from the past, and where you can watch and do some visualization. So sometimes it helps to see how do others do it, but ultimately, I think that the most effective behavior then comes from you can try it from the outside in, but then you need to start trusting yourself and find your own unique way of doing it. And so I'm a big advocate and a big fan of individualism and trying to help an individual find their own unique style rather than copying another, and we all start to become like each other.
Yes, yeah. You said that change is a hot topic these days. So one of my final questions is to ask you whether you've ever ventured on the level of change, which I think is quite common these days, where people believe that there is an upliftment taking place in people's levels of consciousness, and they may aspire to do it, but they may need some help. Does that ever crop up where you meet people?
I mean, I think what you're referring to is, at least in the situations that I find, is where, particularly working with successful individuals, that have accomplished a lot. They've accomplished what they thought that they would need to be happy, to be satisfied. Mm-hmm. And what they then share with me is that they realize that they're not, that something's still missing.
Yes.
And they start to ask about, you know, things like meditation or things like yoga or things like, you know, looking for something in their life that will give them a greater sense of meaning than having what they thought they needed in terms of how they measured success.
Yeah.
And I think what you're referring to is that the degree that people are striving for fulfillment.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of life coaches now that are starting to emerge. It's become a very big field, life coaching.
Yes, yes.
And life coaching is really focused on, you know, how do you live a fulfilled life? So it's not so much psychotherapy as it is, you know, where are you, where would you like to be, and how do we help you get there? And I think that that is what's happening, and I hope, this is my own personal view, is that I hope that humanity is evolving and that we're moving to become more and more conscious. Conscious about how we deal with each other, conscious about our environment and how we deal with our environment. Are we just takers, or are we giving back to this planet, to the conflicts that we see in the world between religious conflicts that create wars, that create divides between people? So I think it underlies my career and my work is that, you know, I can help individuals with behavior change and, you know, and lasting change, but ultimately I'm hoping to contribute to people becoming more conscious.
Yes, yes. Well, you're certainly correct in your assumptions there. So it's interesting to know that you can apply your own experience and understanding with people who are seeking, say, as you've mentioned, upliftment. Now, we've been chatting away here and time's flying by. We've got a few minutes left. I think I ought to ask you to tell us a wee bit about your book, where people can buy it, and I guess you'd also like to give them your website address.
With pleasure. Thanks, Mike. The book can be purchased at their local bookstores or online at Amazon.com. Many people now, purchase books that way.
Yeah.
But Barnes & Noble carries it and some of the smaller bookstores in people's neighborhoods. It's a small book with a big message. It's under 90 pages, so it's something that it's more of a handbook. It's a very practical book that people can carry with them, can keep with them, in their briefcase, in their bag. So it was designed intentionally for that. So it's not a heavy, thick, textbook type of book. Or they can go to my website, which is www.hankfieger.com. That's HANKFIEGER.com. Or to behaviorchangebook.com. And that will take them to the book site as well.
Right. Do you do consultations online?
I do, yes. I do some consultations online. It usually phone consultations are much more effective than purely, online. But I've accommodated many. I've got clients in Japan and clients in South Africa and clients in Australia that, due to the locale and the time difference, we can create some consultations online as well.
Right.
So I'm available that way.
Do you have a particular landline number for people who would like to telephone you with that in mind?
I do. Right now, unfortunately, I'm traveling because of the book tour promoting the book. So I could give a landline, and that is 310-395-2052.
Yes.
And if for some reason I'm in transit, there is a voicemail, and I would
that's
be happy
fine.
To get back in touch with people.
Okay. That's great. It's been a very interesting program. I'm going to have to stop you there because I've got about a minute to announce my guests for next week. So I'm very much obliged at you coming onto my program at such short notice, and that is very much appreciated. Thank you very much, Hank.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate the time we took. You take care.
Right. Now, my friends, I'm sure you enjoyed that. That was a subject a little bit different, perhaps, from most that I have on my programs. My guest next Friday is Jacqueline Smith, who is an animal communicator. Now, because I'm going away for a break, this has been pre-recorded, and I can tell you, you will not want to miss this particular program. She is absolutely brilliant. She's been doing it for nearly 30 years, and she's got some wonderful stories to tell. So thank you for being with me today. I hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.